A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Andy Murray is a singles tennis player once more. He has played, he has lost against Richard Gasquet in Cincinnati, and myself, David Law, and Matt Roberts are here to talk all about it. It was a loss, Matt, but I think there were reasons from a Murray's perspective to be relatively hopeful. I certainly thought so. I mean, I think he didn't look in great shape at the start. I mean, he looked an absolute mess, nerves-wise. We know now that he's not going to play in the US Open singles. He's going to play doubles and mixed doubles. What were your impressions of what you saw? How did it go as you'd have expected it to have gone, given he's not played for, 7 months in the singles?
I think it more or less did, yeah. I think our view of the match can't really exist in a bubble. We have to remember the context of which Murray came into this match, as you said, not having played for 6 or 7 months, having had the hip resurfacing surgery, having only started practicing singles a couple of weeks ago. And when you consider all that, I thought he actually played pretty well. It was a nervy, tentative start, which he admitted. And he said something in his press conference which was really interesting, I think, where he said he was slow getting to balls, not because his hip was hurting, but because he's developed bad habits for compensating for the fact that his hip has been hurting for so long, that he's not going to balls with that explosiveness that we're used to seeing from him. But what we did see throughout the match was that he grew into it and he became looser, he became freer, and he started hitting the ball a bit bigger and reaching balls that he wasn't reaching in the first set. And in that way, it sort of reminded me of the Bautista Agut match in Melbourne, where he really grew into that one. I think then it was more out of defiance a little bit more, but equally we kind of saw his body start responding a little bit more the way he wanted it to. And I think that happened today. And by the end, I thought it was quite encouraging what we saw.
Yeah, because I mean, at the start, he walked onto the court with his phone, I would imagine, videoing the experience of walking out onto a singles tennis court again for the first time in 7 months, which was, it was quite touching, really, to see that and see how much that moment is something that he wanted to hold, I suppose, as a memory and be able to play it back again.
Yeah, this is the Tsitsipas world we're living in now, where you have to film and vlog your content.
Yes, it's like people at football matches who watch penalty shootouts and they video them and take pictures of them at the same time. You kind of think, wouldn't it be slightly better to just experience it in real life rather than watching it through the little lens of your phone? But I think we can forgive Andy Murray that one. He'll be able to show his daughters that video as well, which will be a really nice memory for them. But I mean, when he started the match, he seemed really sluggish to me and really unsure of how much, or even though he's played all these doubles, even though he's played all these practice sets, He's still unsure, isn't he, about that last 10% or so, about how hard he can push himself into the corners. I think it was very interesting what he said. You mentioned it in the press comments about developing the bad habits, and that he'd got used to not running for drop shots because it hurt so much for 18 months. And, well, it doesn't hurt now. He can run for them, and yet he's still not running for them. So he has got to develop that ability to not react in that way. But I also thought the other thing is the nerves were just overwhelming him. He looked absolutely exhausted early on to me, as though the whole occasion was making him short of breath, maybe a little lightheaded. And I can really relate to that, sort of doing something that is something you haven't done for so long. I mean, even on a non-physical level, I know that when and I've been commentating on the radio for 20 years, and I know that if I haven't done it for a couple of months or 3 or 4 months more specifically, and I'll come to Wimbledon having not commentated since the Australian Open, I know that the first match that I do, I'm absolutely exhausted afterwards because I'm not used to it, I'm not hardened to it, and I'm a bit nervous about it, even though I've got all this experience. And that's without having to actually do anything physical and take on one of the world's best players at the same time. So I can understand it, but I did feel like he worked his way through that and actually started to make it pretty competitive against Richard Gasquet, who was playing decently.
Yeah, I think if he'd been playing someone a little bit more ruthless than Gasquet at the start, that first set could have got a little bit ugly. Like, he was 2 love down, wasn't he, Murray? And then he had to really struggle to hold serve, but he did. And then you kind of felt the nerves disappear a little bit and he was into the match. But equally, had he been playing someone not quite as good as Gasquet, he could legitimately have won. You know, his tennis was there. It wasn't all there, but it was there well enough for him to be able to compete with Gasquet, who last week had a really good week in Montreal and was playing some really good tennis, not to help Kei Nishikori, who I rather stupidly picked to win the title. So Murray's tennis instincts were all still there. It's just about the physicality and not just the fitness, but also working up his muscles to be able to play in the same way that he used to, get that beefiness back on the serve and hit his forehand harder. And that will come with time and with matches and with hard work. But I thought for a first run, apart from the first couple of games, it was positive overall.
It was an interesting one towards the end of the match when we knew what was going to happen results-wise. And then your mind goes forward to the US Open. And we were having a chat in our little WhatsApp world about whether we felt he would play the US Open or not. And I must say, my immediate instinct was, well, why wouldn't he play? I know that he's not going to win it. I know he's not going to maybe even win a match. But I sort of thought, why wouldn't he play? Because I remember Stan Wawrinka turning up at the Australian Open a year and a half ago and saying, look, I've got to start somewhere, so let me just get used to it over the best of five. And I thought that maybe Murray might do the same thing. However, today was the day that they announced the wild cards for the US Open, of which Andy Murray, I guess, would need one. Although he could have used his protected ranking to have gone in, couldn't he?
Yeah, he could have done.
But, you know, he chose not to do that. And actually, he said in his press conference that even if he had have decided to leave it right until the last minute, he probably wouldn't have played. I was a little bit surprised by that. But, you know, I've been getting surprised by Andy Murray for the last 15 years.
Yeah, I thought he... Based on what I saw today, I thought that he might play. I had also overlooked the wild card issue. I think just comparing it to last year, I mean, he played the US Open last year and he's in a much better position now. So that, but I suppose he also has got a long-term plan now, and he wouldn't want to jeopardize his future by rushing into a decision and playing five sets, because he knows now that as long as he's pain-free, he can build incrementally and steadily. I also think it will be quite nice for him to be able to take a little bit of time and not have another hurdle right in front of him, that hurdle being five sets, because his whole year has been about taking these leaps of faith, you know, undergoing the surgery, then getting back on court, then playing doubles, now playing singles. It's just been a series of hurdles for him.
Yes.
And now he's got a little bit of time. The next best of five isn't until next year now, if he's not playing the US Open. So he can now just build over best of three with his singles. He's entered those events in China that you mentioned yesterday on the podcast with Catherine. And, you know, he can kind of, it's all on his time now. And he's the one kind of dictating the decisions rather than having to be dictated by needing a surgery or needing to get back to this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and actually, I kind of feel when I look at that schedule and hear the way he's talking, he sees it so much more long term now than I probably ever really expected. It doesn't really matter that he's not going to play US Open singles. He is going to play doubles. He is going to play mixed doubles. So he'll have the experience of going there and being competitive. But it's all about building. And he intends to build for the long haul here. He wants to do it properly. And I also found it interesting. He said, I didn't really want to play and not be that bothered about the result, not just be a tourist and happy to be out there. And I'm happy to say that I'm really quite disappointed sitting here at the way things went. I felt I could have done better. I want to do better. And now I can take the information from this match and onto the practice court and start working on all those things that weren't functioning the way I would want them to work. Yeah, it seems to me that, well, the old Andy Murray's back, really, in terms of just putting his career right at the forefront. I mean, look, obviously his family is the most important thing to him in his life, but there's a clear desire to be a tennis player at the highest level again, and he's just going to keep on building and doing all the things that he knows work for him over the course of a 15-year career, obviously with the new element of the hip. But the hip doesn't appear to be causing him any distress anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly as you said, he said, I thought that my perspective would have changed completely on this, and it hasn't, because I'm sitting here disappointed, which is a good thing. And we've spoken about that a lot, I think, this year, haven't we? How we do like it when players are disappointed after a loss. That means that they feel something and they're working towards something. And Murray is back in that space again as a competitive tennis player. Okay, it's kind of one step at a time building blocks, but he's there now. I thought it was a little bit of a shame that the atmosphere was a little bit flat. I was kind of all day I've been trying to transport myself back to what it was like in Melbourne at the time. You know, what Catherine was saying on the podcast about how we adjust to a new normal. I wanted to feel like I felt in Melbourne again. So I've been listening to the podcast that we did back then and reading the Twitter feeds from people back then. And the overwhelming feeling was that, in a way, was a kind of perfect send-off. We were all saying it because the atmosphere was so great, because Murray had rinsed every last ounce out of himself in that match and just, I think you used the word sort of, he went into his career and found what he's all about to be able to make that match competitive against Bautista Agut in Melbourne. And he received such warmth and such love from the crowd that it did feel like a perfect send-off. And today was a little bit anticlimactic in comparison to that. But I asked on Twitter what people were feeling when Murray came out onto the court. And we had some really nice responses, people saying they were inspired, encouraged, proud, nervous, excited. And that's the point of Andy Murray, isn't it? He does make you feel all those things. The specific feeling that you are having, people will be having different ones, but the very fact that Murray's on court makes you feel, makes you care. And I think there are some players who simply don't have that effect, but Murray, that's one of the things I think people have missed about Murray. And albeit the crowd in Cincinnati was maybe a little less than I would have hoped, but I think you got the sense, you know, we're doing a podcast about it, people are writing about it, people are talking about it, and that is what is what we've been missing from Andy Murray. It's just so nice to have him back.
Yeah, it is actually. I felt he gave And he's spoken a lot about the time he was without tennis and the feelings that he went through. But he was asked in his final, I think his final question in that press conference tonight was about other sort of things that he's kind of learnt about himself in the off time and habits and etc. that he might have developed. And he said the biggest thing with coming back is that when he was in all that pain and he wasn't able to play, he was really worried about what he would do with himself without tennis. And he said, the moment I had that surgery and wasn't in pain anymore, I realised I'm okay with it. I do know what I want to do, or I am okay without tennis. And I think that's just liberated him, really. That's enabled him to attack this period of his career that he didn't expect he would ever have, and to do it with a great attitude and a slightly, and maybe this is a sign of it, really. The fact that he's not going to play the US Open, the fact that he's not going to take this chance is a sign that he's not in a rush. He's okay. He's not thinking, I'm 32 years old, I need to play this US Open, the Grand Slam, and get back out there and compete for the titles, because he's not ready yet in at that level, and he's not happy, he's not prepared to settle in that way.
Mm. I also think he's going to be a really fascinating player to watch as a tennis player over the next few months, because he'll be figuring out what he can do, what he can't do, and it'll be interesting to see whether he does have to adjust his game a little bit. Obviously, movement and defence has always been such an important foundation of his game, a weapon, really. Will that still be the case with a metal hip? I mean, I think he probably hopes it will be, but he might have to adjust the way he plays, and it will be fascinating to watch that happen, because we know he's got such a good tennis IQ. You feel like he will figure out the best thing for him. I think even watching him play doubles over these last few months, I've sort of been reminded of how well doubles actually suits his skill set, with the way he can return and the hands he's got, and he can probably use them a little bit more in singles as well.
I read a quote actually about his doubles, that he said that he's looking at the Olympics very seriously now for next year, and he will try to plan his year so that he's able to play doubles with Jamie and have a real run at a medal at the Olympics, because it was 4 years ago, wasn't it, when he won singles gold, but they lost in the first round in the doubles. Mm. And he was really gutted about that, and he said, I don't think I planned my year well enough in order to be at my best for that particular doubles. So, you know, it's interesting on that level. But all in all, Matt, I think it's fair to say that was a pretty encouraging experience for Andy Murray watchers. I mean, yes, there's frustration they won't get to see him at the US Open in the singles, but, you know, this is all second chance saloon stuff, isn't it, really? Because we weren't expecting this.
Absolutely. It all feels like a bonus. And I think anyone who is a little bit disappointed about the result today, probably Murray himself included, as he said that he was disappointed, you just have to remember what it was like only a few months ago. I mean, he couldn't walk his dog, he couldn't tie his shoelaces, and now here he is talking about having a tennis career again. And that is an extraordinary development that's happened over the course of these few months, with an awful lot of hard work that he's done.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Susan Longlin all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TennisPod20 for 20% off your annual subscription.
Done.
Yeah, and anyway, he's in Cincinnati. He's going to play doubles as well with Feliciano Lopez, which I think is another sign of that incremental build that he's putting together. A bit more work on the body, and he also obviously knew that he might not get very far in the singles. He was watched by Feliciano Lopez and by Nick Kyrgios in the crowd, his crew, his bros.
Squad goals there.
So that was nice. And so he'll play doubles. Incidentally, Jamie Murray in the doubles won through. I've just seen Johanna Konta go out at the hands of Rebecca Peterson, and that's her second straight defeat since Wimbledon. Obviously, she lost to Barbora Strytova at Wimbledon. She lost last week as well. And then this one, she was actually 1-4 and a point from 1-5 down in the final set against Peterson, and then managed to really scramble her way back, and it looked like she was going to end up winning it. Got edged out in the end. And so a couple of disappointing defeats really for Konta. No need for mass panic or anything like that, but I always think of her as a player who needs some wins and needs a bit of form, you know. And she had that great run in Rome earlier this year. She ended up taking that into the French Open, and so I think she's going to probably play again next week. And I would suggest she needs to, because she's not the sort of player you typically see come out cold into a slam and do well.
Absolutely. All Jo Konta's best results have always been preceded by a run of form just before them. But this isn't usually a time of year where she has had brilliant results, is it? I'm thinking back. I think she did make that fourth round at the US Open, I think, 2015, which was obviously great, but it's not typically been a brilliant time of the season for her. And a couple of tricky draws. I think it was Yastremska she played in Toronto who kind of blew her off the court before she'd even had a chance to settle. And Peterson has been in some decent form. She beat Sloane Stephens the other week, didn't she, in Washington, I think. So perhaps a couple of tricky draws there. And if she can find some wins next week, that really will set her up for the US Open. Otherwise, she'll be going in there pretty cold.
Indeed. Well, on my TV next to me at the moment, we've got Maria Sharapova against Alison Risk just about to start, with the winner to face Ash Barty at the top of the draw there. We went through all the draws in some depth yesterday, of course, in the Tennis Podcast at the end of Montreal and Toronto. So that one is still there if you haven't listened to it yet. That's Catherine and myself yesterday talking about everything that went on in those two tournaments. Catherine's currently on a plane on her way back to the UK. So Matt, Catherine and myself will reconvene in a week's time in London, hopefully in a pub, something like that. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Sounds great.
If Catherine can be bothered. She was questioning whether she was going to bother, actually, which I'm convinced we will talk her out of.
Wasn't it all dependent on whether Kyrgios Djokovic happens?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so basically, tennis gods, it's all up to you as to whether we have the presence of Catherine Whittaker. Oh, well, I suppose it's more up to Novak Djokovic and Nick Kyrgios,
yeah,
really, isn't
true.
It? Because the draw has done its bit. Those two now need to win the requisite matches,
fact,
and we might get that
I think
match.
It's mainly down to Nick Kyrgios.
I think you're probably right. Is there anything else struck you from listening to the podcast yesterday that you were desperate to get out there, Matt? Or are you going to save it, all your thoughts and all your gems for next week?
Well, I was actually, I mean, I brought it up myself, but I was very pleased you didn't mention my Nishikori prediction. I felt I got off quite lightly there.
Let's do another 20 minutes on that. is what I say.
I watched a bit of Felix Auger-Aliassime today, and I was a little bit alarmed by his serve, actually. I was counting it up, and he's pretty much hit almost as many double faults as he has aces since Wimbledon. They seem to really be piling up, and I think people did notice that his serve was perhaps a little bit of an issue earlier on in the year when, in the tight moments, his ball toss goes a bit all over the place. I think we spoke about it at Queen's.
Yeah, but he lost 6-3, 6-3 to Miomir Kecmanovic from Serbia.
Yeah, so I think that's something to watch out for with Felix Auger-Aliassime. Obviously, he's so young and he's got loads of time to develop, and he can, but it's something to keep an eye on with him.
Sure is. And then, of course, once we have finished next week's show, I've got my big interview that I'm going to tell you all about, which we're going to put out next week. Matt's heard it. It's good, isn't it, Matt? We haven't told anybody who it is with, but you've heard it, haven't you?
It's very good. Yeah, I'm on a tight leash. I'm not allowed to tell anyone.
Yes, exactly. Just you and me. That's the only people who've heard it so far. So anyway, that's coming up the week after. And then we've got our dailies from the US Open, of course. Catherine will be there for Amazon Prime Video. I'll be commentating for BBC Radio 5 Live in the UK. And we will be doing nightly tennis podcasts from the Big Apple, from Flushing Meadows, every single night. And we can't wait. It's so much fun. And do tell your friends. If you know somebody who likes tennis and you've enjoyed this tennis podcast, tell your mates about it, all right? Get them listening. We want to get as big an audience as we possibly can, have as many contributions from yourselves. Do contact us on Twitter if you've got any thoughts. I've been getting all sorts of emails. I had some interesting emails overnight, Matt. I actually had a couple of people saying that they felt we'd been a bit too hard on Bianca Andreescu in terms of how she may polarize opinion. And felt that's not fair on her, and because we mentioned that there's a lot of drama that goes on around her. Now we obviously like her a lot. What do you think? Quickly, you any thoughts about Bianca Andreescu?
I'm all in on the drama, to be honest. I do think still that is her defining characteristic at the moment, and I don't necessarily mean drama in a bad sense. I mean that she plays dramatic matches. Dramatic things happen in her matches. She wins in dramatic fashion. And
yeah,
I think that is what I find so exciting about it. And the fact that she's managing to win, 10 three-set matches in a row? She's demonstrating an extraordinary grit. And I think I put on Twitter that she's well-versed in the dark arts of winning tennis matches. And for her to have that quality at 19, I think is extraordinary. So often we see players with all the shots and all the ability, but they can't figure out how to put it together to win matches. But she has that in abundance. And I completely agree with you that she will divide some opinion. I think at the moment a lot of people are loving most of what she does, and quite rightly, and partly because we've missed it for 4 or 5 months, that it felt like March again this week, last week, with the way she was winning and doing all the same things she was doing. So no, I agreed with you. I think she's great, and definitely in the US Open mix.
Is she really? That's an early call for the mix, Matt. Blimey. Well,
you wouldn't be surprised if Andreescu won the US Open, would you?
Won the US Open?
I mean, based on form and ability,
I don't think
it would be a surprise. I'm not necessarily picking
Big
her.
Call. This is a mammoth call from
Matt
Roberts.
I'm not picking her to win the US Open, but I think she has to be a contender.
I think this is an enormous pick from Matt. And we're going to have this out in next week's show when we're in the pub, is all I can say. Matt Roberts thinks that Bianca Andreescu may well win the US Open. So we'll move on from there. She's not playing Cincinnati. She's pulled out of that. So we'll find out how she gets on in the US Open. Can't wait now. Blow me.
This is basically practice, isn't it, these last 2 days? For the US Open, where you're going daily, you've decided to Have a little practice now. I just can't
get enough of it. It's too much fun. Okay. Well, yeah. So do get your thoughts into us at Tennis Podcast. You can send us a longer message if you like via our website, tennispodcast.net. There's a contact form on there that you can contact us on. We have our Tennis Podcast shop there. If you'd like a T-shirt or a bag with Tennis Podcast written on it, show your support for us. We appreciate it. It's lovely when we see people wearing T-shirts. It sounds very arrogant, doesn't it? But we do. Let's be honest, we do love it. So, anything else I've forgotten? I don't think so. Other than say our newsletter goes out tomorrow, so get yourself on the list for that as well. There'll be a link in the show notes to this particular podcast if you'd like to receive our weekly newsletter, which we've delayed a day because we knew we were going to do this extra show. So we've still got to get our predictions in for this week. I don't even know what mine is yet. But anyway, it'll be in the newsletter. So get yourself on that and you'll be receiving one weekly throughout the year and daily at the Slams. And we'll be back again, as I say, in a few days' time when we meet up in London. And then it's US Open time. See you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.